This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Danielle Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilliwa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is Amanda Nduka.
And my name is Dino Ray Ramos. And today
we have a fun one.
She is like a queen. I love her. I know she's younger than me, and that doesn't sound like shade. But it's like I admire her so much.
Yeah.
Just how like what she does as an interviewer and like essentially a journalist.
Yeah. So we have Z-Way.
We didn't even say her name.
Yeah. Z-Way. Z-Way, and she has a late night talk show on Showtime. It just premiered
May 9th.
And you guys, we watched before the interview, we watched a couple of clips, and we were already cracking up on these but it's a variety show. She, like, this girl is bold, unapologetic,
yeah,
like everything that you, I mean, we love to see it.
Yeah, but also she's bold and apologetic in a way that's not like trying to attack anyone. She just,
yeah,
I think what she does well is she uses truth to make people like say what they need to say,
and yeah,
like or just kind of bring out truths from other people. She uses truth to get truth. Oh, I like
right
that.
Yeah, right. And you guys, she's, I mean, how many black leads of late night talk shows have we, I mean,
besides like Robin Thede had
Robin
one.
Had yeah she had a you know there's I feel like other than Robin, there hasn't been a
did Wanda Sykes have a daytime? That was daytime, I think.
Yeah, but
did she? I may be wrong.
Yeah, I actually don't remember. I think maybe, I feel like there was some type of talk. There were either talks about it or something. But anyways, Z-Way on Showtime, she has these amazing guests, like Gloria Steinem was on it, Fran Lebowitz.
Yeah. Which is like her interview with Fran was just like great, and like Fran is just as unapologetic as Z-Way.
Yeah,
she's like a New York icon, so just to see them interact, it's kind of like the new generation, I don't want to say old generation, but kind of like new generation with an icon,
kind of,
yeah, it's
and to see like their different styles. She touches on things that are relevant, you know, we talk about Karens, we talk about obviously touches on just different race related, I mean, it's
yeah,
but she does it, and to me I thought it was hilarious, and I
yeah,
mean,
it's
you
hilarious.
Know she, like I said, she does it and she's very bold about it. I mean, like the interview she did with Fran Lebowitz was like, I don't want to play games, and she's kind of like, all right, and then she still like went at her. It was so brave. Like Dina and I were talking to her during that, we were all both like inspired, like as journalists seeing her interview.
And then, yeah, and then Zoe is like very like, oh, y'all don't need to be like that. I'm like, oh no, you need to know what you're doing.
Right, but, yeah.
We appreciate you.
No, we do. And I mean, you can see her billboards, which I love too. I literally, driving to where I work out, my F45, there's like three billboards of her, like literally back to back to back. Like, I'm like, okay, I like, I'm seeing this promotion and I like it.
Yes.
Hopefully that means they're confident in this. So honestly, everybody should check this out.
Yes.
It is on Showtime. Sundays, I believe, is when it comes
on. Yeah, Sundays.
Sundays
on Showtime.
Right. But I mean, she's going to do great things.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
So,
without further ado, here is Z-Way on New Hollywood.
Z-Way, welcome to Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. I'm very excited to have you on. Just one, your show, Z-Way, which is premiering on Showtime, May 9th, is... we've seen a couple of clips before, and I was just telling you, I'm hooked. Like the Fran Lebowitz interview.
You have not seen anything yet.
You gave us a taste and that was enough.
It was enough. I was like, girl, I'm there. I'm tuning in. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. We are very excited
to have you.
Yeah. And so something that we like to do on this, just to get this conversation started, is we like to sort of get a sense of like your background, what was your sort of your impetus into getting into this business? What was your inspiration? So for you, and I mean, we like to ask this to our comedians. So I know some people like think it's good, but for you first, where did you first find your love for, or your desire to be in this business? And as a comedian, I have to ask, where did you find your funny?
Where did I find my interest into being in this business? I think it started with, I was a poetry major at one point in college. And I loved writing poetry, and I very quickly realized that there were not many jobs for poets other than the poet laureate. Mm-hmm. And so I was searching for like how I could incorporate poetry in a job that paid my bills and my student loans. And then I found writing jokes for television. And so I did this internship at Comedy Central. It was a rotational internship that was started by Chris Rock. We were called the Rock Turns, and we rotated through Colbert Report and Daily Show and on air, off air promo, whatever. And so my week at the Colbert Report, I was a very chatty intern, and I got a joke on the show, and it suddenly opened up my world, and I changed my mind from being, you know, a first generation Nigerian woman believing that you had to be a doctor, lawyer, or sort of like a disappointment, to understanding that there were creative endeavors that you could pursue, and that there were jobs in that field. And so that was my first encounter with entertainment and realizing that that I could be in that world. And so after that internship, I went back to Northwestern University. I started a humor magazine. I started interning at The Onion. I interned at IO, which was the improv comedy theater in Chicago. And I would just created a bunch of stuff until eventually I got myself to New York and I started working as a professional writer. But that's my entry point into entertainment.
And so when did you first know that you were funny, that you can make other people laugh?
I mean, I've always had this personality. So I've been making people laugh since I was like a child. I'm a middle child, so I was famously a ham.
mentioning, we like talking about being first generation on the show because I'm also first generation Nigerian.
Oh, shout out.
Yeah. Filipino's first generation Filipino.
Filipino.
As well. We all sort of have that similar, like, oh, you want to be in entertainment, but do you want to be homeless type conversation with our parents?
Well, it's also the thing that's like, you know, I fled a war.
Yeah.
Your ass is going to do here with nothing.
I came here with $3 in my, like, it's like I could barely speak. Anyways, so let me ask you, how did your parents take it when you told them that you wanted to be in this business?
My parents don't know what I do for a living, one. And they legitimately don't know. I was like, oh yeah, the trailer for my television came out recently. And they're like, what television show? So that's fine. But when I first told, I remember one specifically when my mother was driving me my senior year back to school. And she was like, it's not too late to go into pre-med. And I was like, it's absolutely too late. This conversation had been 3 years ago. So yeah, they don't know what I do for a living.
Yeah.
Your parents tell me to this day, it's not too late to go to med school.
I started off as pre-med and then I took chemistry and I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, I'm not about to take 4 years of, you know, organic chem. I was just, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had to suffer through it. I mean, it's honestly, I feel like my parents are now looking back like, yeah, we probably wasted our money, but they wanted me to be in pre-med. And I told them that I wanted to switch my major. They were like, no, we're not paying for that. So I stuck the route. I'm not even using the degree. So it's like, I don't know where this good came from.
You always know what the periodic table is for carbon.
Like, you know, if we go on a game show or something like that, I'm sure we can pull some of these.
Yeah, like we know where the eye wash is at. We know where the
we know what a Bunsen burner is.
The difference between an Erlenmeyer flask and a graduated cylinder.
Okay,
come on, graduated
flex, go off.
Look at you.
Wait, so, didn't yeah. you? What, when you took chemistry,
that information.
Well, when you took chemistry, didn't you have to like take that like at the very first day or like first week? You always had to take that. They showed pictures of things, and you'd just be like, "Oh, this is what this is." This
yeah,
is. And,
you have to take like, an inventory of what everything is. Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe I remember all that shit.
Yeah, that's the thing about college. It's just like sometimes I just get like hot flashes where I'm like, "Oh, I'm like George Wallace." It's like you just like it's like traumatic stress dreams about history.
Yeah. Wait. So, what was your major before?
I started off as a math major, and then I very quickly was like, all of these, I'm surrounded by like men who thought I was dumb, and they would constantly kind of question me. So then I pivoted to like sociology and then history and then a bunch of stuff. And then I ended up doing a double major in African American studies and radio, television, film with a minor in poetry.
Oh my God, nice. You're basically using all of those right now.
You are, exactly.
And you know what? That's the great grift. Is that somehow I've connected what I studied into my actual profession.
And you're successful at it. You have your own show now. You were writing on Desus and Mero. You've been doing interviews. Like I said, you're doing a lot more with your degree than I'm doing with mine. but now you're in front of the camera in all your glory, and we get to see you in all your glory, which is very exciting. So was in front of the camera, was that something that was always sort of in the plan for you? Or were you sort of just like, you wanted to be a writer and then...
I think a combination of the two. I started writing way before I started performing. So my first joke I ever sold was for The Onion. And so that's when I started like kind of got my comedy chops. Yeah. And then it took me a while to perform because I was just afraid of being vulnerable, and I just didn't know how to break into that space. But I've always had this personality. So I've always, you know, I've always idolized Britney Spears. So I've always wanted to be a pop star. So it's not that I didn't have these aspirations. I just wasn't really comfortable with myself. But professionally, yeah. Once I started working as a professional writer, soon after that, I wanted to be in front of the camera. And so that's why I started creating my YouTube and my Instagram yeah. live and performing yeah. live shows in New York.
Yeah. Well, there's like we'll get to, you know, the Instagram baited and all of that just because that was kind of gave a lot of people life. And one of my friends was like, "Oh, I think I might just start subscribing to Showtime just for Z-Way's show."
That's great to hear. Yeah, I'm excited for everybody I've been so excited about the fanfare for the show. We've worked so hard. Like we shot it in 15 days. And
that's
so it's yeah. wild. And so we've just been, you know, like guns blazing, editing the show. And we have live interviews to tape it again in May. But yeah, so we're working really hard. So I am really excited that people are excited. And I hope that you guys love the show as much as we do.
Well, you know, you've worked at like some of these very, you know, cool major, you know, TV shows, you know, like Desus and Mero and The Daily Show. And, you know, how has working for these various talk shows and everything kind of informed your career route? And was there like something unexpected that you found out about yourself when you were like writing for these spaces or these places?
Sure. I mean, I only interned at The Daily Show. I've written for Dickinson, Desus and Mero, and The Rundown with Robin Thede, in addition to Freelancing for The Onion and stuff. But as far as the experiences, I mean, you learn so much about the business just from watching people, how they operate their productions, how they run their own writers' rooms, what they value in comedy, what they're looking for in work. So it's been such, like, I've been lucky. It's like reverse grad school in the sense that I'm getting paid to learn. So that's been such a rewarding experience because I can take all these valuable lessons that I just learned from taking notes from these really brilliant people like Desus and Mero and apply them to my show as well. So I've been really fortunate enough to have like a wide variety of jobs that allow me to be a really, hopefully, a good showrunner.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, I do want to get into these conversations you've had, you know, that like everyone loved, well, at least people of color love, and as journalists ourselves, we always go into these spaces, you know, asking questions, and you're like, oh, are we going to offend these people? Like, what's good, what's safe, what's not safe to talk about? And then, it's interesting in how you approach it because you're kind of very in a good way, cavalier and fearless. And it's not being malicious. You are telling nothing but truths. And it's not gotcha journalism, which a lot of people may think it is, because, like, for instance, in the clip we saw of you and Fran Lebowitz, where you were just like, where she's like, oh, I don't play games. I don't think we're spoiling anything here. But, you know, and then you're just like, oh, well, you know.
When does this come out?
This is going to come out maybe, well, this might come out right before your episode, or like shortly after, or like the Tuesday after your episode.
But what you're talking about is actually, it's in the trailer. So I think.
Oh, it is in the trailer? Okay, yeah. Good. But, you know, just the way you ask these questions, you know, I'm like, oh, I could learn from Z-Way.
Yeah,
you
know? I was thinking that too. I wonder if she's nervous, like.
Yeah.
And like.
Are you nervous when you kind of ask these uncomfortable questions that we have been kind of trained to be uncomfortable to ask, you know, because, you know, a lot of, like, in our spaces, we talk, like, people of color, queer people, we talk freely, right? And we're not scared, we're safe. But once we kind of break out of our echo chamber and go to, you know, a predominantly white space or something, you know, where, like, the dominant culture kind of has their thumb down on us, we kind of code switch and we don't talk about things, or we talk about things in these, like, very veiled ways.
Right.
So I guess,
comfortable.
What, like, how did you go, like, when you first started doing Baited and asking, you know, interviewing people like Alyssa Milano and all these people, how did you approach it with such fearlessness, but at the same time being mindful? Because it's a very tricky balancing act, for me at least. But how was it for you just to, you know, do this these impressive interviews that kind of inspire me to just be a better journalist and just to take no shit.
Yes, I like to think of myself as the Ida B. Wells of comedy. And honestly, I wear that crown proudly. Mm-hmm. As far as how do I get nervous before my interviews? Not when asking individual questions, but there is some nervousness that you get as a performer, at least I do, where I just want to make sure I do a good job. I do right by my guest and I do right by my audience and I do right by myself. Mm-hmm. I feel a lot of responsibility that people appreciate my comedy, not only because it's funny, but also because it's informative. And so I want to make sure that I'm constantly hitting that bar that I've set for myself. So that's the nervousness. But individual questions like, how many Black friends do you have? No, I don't get nervous about that because I try to lead with kindness, right? Like, my point isn't to humiliate people. My point isn't to get anybody canceled. My point isn't to be cruel. My point is to have, like, really poignant conversations that are awkward and silly, because it's silly to ask Fran Lebowitz, hey Fran, what do you care more about, slow walkers or racism? That's a silly question. Yeah. But if you come back to the layers of it, there's really a lot of interesting politics behind the answer to that question, or, you know, a non-answer to that question. So yeah. I'm constantly working to make sure my work hits comedy as well as information. Yeah. But I just try to be a really kind person and be fair and not try to make anybody look bad, because that's not what it's about. I mean, also, you guys can relate to this, I'm sure, but I've been having conversations about race since I could speak. Yeah. Point. Period. Like, yes. That's it. And I don't know about you, but I remember I have, like, these like memories where I remember having these conversations about race when I was a teenager and being entirely ill-equipped to talk about it. You know, where someone would be like, oh, how is that racist? And I'd be like, I don't know, I'm a teenager, but I can feel it in my bones. But you don't have that vocabulary. Yeah, so yeah. As an adult, I'm kind of trying to reparent the trauma that I had as a kid and be like, okay, yo, I didn't have the vocabulary when I was 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. But now that I do, how can I make light of it? How can I relive these moments and also help people who I'm talking to understand the ways that they don't even realize they're speaking from a position that is totally converse to mine? And that's really what these conversations are about, because it's like, we all exist in this world. Racism isn't something that was made up in my head, and the best we can do is acknowledge it, that it exists, and have conversations and that aren't trying to villainize the respective people we're talking to, but do try to acknowledge the honest to God truth.
Yeah
it's so interesting, because I think there's a certain generation of people who were like, we were, you know, I talk about this all the time, but like, we were trained not to bring this stuff up because it was like, oh, that's just the way it is. And you can't challenge that. You can't question it. And I have trouble trying to unlearn that. That's why, like, when I saw you, you know, interviewing these people, and I was like, oh, that's what needs to be said. You know, this is kind of, these conversations are uncomfortable, but, you know, they are conversations that need to be had in order to fix things, if things can be even fixed, you know.
I mean, think about, even if we have been socialized to not have these conversations, people have had these conversations at me. I don't know about you, but I've definitely been quartered in a bar and had someone just randomly bring up that their nanny was, you know, an African woman. And it's like, wait, we're at a Wendy, you know, like, it's like, wait, where did that come from? So I've had natural hair or braids and someone come up and literally touch my hair and be like, this is so pretty. And it's like, wait, this is like a violation of space. Right. You don't want to be rude. Yeah. You don't want to say, hey, get your hands off of me. So you're just like, thank you for the compliment. That feels invasive. Right. So we can all, even if you've been socialized to not have these conversations, we are having them subconsciously.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And there, so it's about breaking the subconscious to the conscious.
Yeah.
There's the whole thing about, like, I've always been asked the one thing that I never realized was a microaggression until now. Where are you really from? That question. It's a lot of Asians get that question.
Yeah, and it's like Massachusetts.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm from Texas.
Where
are you really from?
Dallas. I grew up in Dallas.
Texas, like, San Antonio, Texas. And also just the whole thing about, you know, just people, because my last name's Ramos, right? And so people automatically assume I'm Latino. And I'm like, and I've been mistaken for Latino, Indian, Black, and just like all these other races. And I've, like, all my life just had to kind of, you know, just be all, no, you know, just kind of silent about it and just be all, I'm Filipino. And then they're like, oh, but your last name's Ramos. You can't be Filipino. And I'm like, no, it's called colonialism.
Yeah, I'm really glad that, like, I'm honestly, I get really excited seeing, like, people of color, especially like first generation Nigerians, doing things like this, because I think that you're sort of, you know, dispelling this old, like, we have to sort of, like you said, socializing to make everybody else feel comfortable, right? Like, we have to sort of move in a way that we don't want to offend anybody or make our white counterparts feel uncomfortable, but in turn we're the ones that are dealt with the uncomfortability because of, you know, this is sort of how we've been taught to live. But, like, having somebody like you that's sort of in this, you know, had this huge platform, you're talking to somebody like Fran Lebowitz or the guy from Happy Endings, that his name
Adam Pally.
Yeah,
lovely. Yeah, so, like, funny.
And you're talking to them and you're asking them really uncomfortable questions, and you're doing so like, I'm like you're doing so fearlessly, like, you're doing so, it's like, and it's like nothing fazes you, even when they come back and they say something, you know, off or whatever, it's like you're still like, you stick to this thing, and you sort of like, you still kind of stick to your point. And I just really thought that was so refreshing, especially seeing a Nigerian woman on a variety TV show that does things like this, right? Like, it's just really really, really refreshing. And I'm excited to see the show. So for people who haven't seen it, but for people who might not have heard about it, or what, how would you describe this, your show?
I mean, it's a variety show in the truest sense of the word. There are going to be interviews both live to tape and pre-tape. There are going to be sketches, commercials, proper sketches, field pieces with real people, music videos. I'm the musical guest every episode. So there's something for everybody. Mm-hmm. Whatever your tastes are as a comedian or as a comedy lover, there's a wide spectrum of what I do. I mean, yeah, as what I do as a performer, as a writer, as a producer. And so you're going to feel that in the show.
Mm-hmm. How was it for you being able to balance everything, being a writer, producer, and then also performing? Was that challenging for you, or what how did you sort of juggle everything?
I'm a control freak. So I wouldn't have it any other way. Okay. I wish I could clone myself. That would make my life easier, but I like to be involved in every process of the edit. I like to be involved in, I've seen every script. I'm like in the weeds of everything because I creatively, this is so much a part of the vision I created with my brilliant team. And so I like that process.
Mm.
Because I would be the one that's like, wait a second, where did that come from? Who told, why did anybody tell me? So it's like, I need to be part of the process to see how it grows.
Yeah, I just think like the three clips they sent us were like part of the Fran Lebowitz interview. Stop Being Poor, the music video.
My banger.
that song is a banger. It is.
I think it should chart. Personally, Patty Harrison's on that song. Patty's this brilliant comedian.
Yeah, I love her.
Everybody loves Patty Harrison. She's a genius. Working with her, like I had never worked so intimately. We've done live shows together for years, but I've never like seen her act in person, and she is brilliant. Mm. So yeah, that's one of her. We have a music video, and we're collaborating on that, and she's in a bunch of sketches as well.
The American Doll one.
With Jane Krakowski and Kristen Milani. Jane Krakowski, I work with her on Dickinson, but she's also someone who I hadn't seen act in person. And my goodness, is that woman really, really sharp? She has this brilliant intuition as a performer, and watching her and Kristen, you've seen the whole sketch, but there's this moment I won't spoil that they improvised, and it is absolutely funny, hilarious, amazing.
I think I know what moment
that is. It's hard to miss.
This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Danielle Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilliwa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
Just because, I think there is something refreshing about, if everything is like what we saw, then I am like totally on board. And I'm all about appointment TV, so I will watch it. I'm like old school that way. Like I will like watch it on TV, but not, get the app, but just like watch it when it goes live.
Okay, so let me ask you. So did you sort of have like a list of like guests? Or you mentioned Jane Krakowski, Bohan Yang, he was in the trailer too. I saw that he was gonna be, was there like a list of just like people that you wanted to be part of the show? Or how did you go about getting all your guests on there?
Definitely, I've been performing live in New York for years. So people like Patty Harrison, Bohan Yang, Sam Taggart, who's in a couple of sketches. Like these are all people who I've been interacting with and a bunch of my Cola Scola. These are people who I've worked with. And okay. So I know exactly what they're gonna give me. And so I can rely on them as performers. So these are people I wanted on my show because they're so much a part of my comedic identity. And then others who I've been fans of, like Jane Krakowski from her days in Dirty Rock, or Jeremy O'Harris I interviewed for my Instagram live show, or Adam Pelly, who I have like known because I'm like cool with Casey Wilson, and I loved Happy Endings. Mm. So they're all, it's a mix of people who I've worked with, who I wanted to have on my show because I love their comedy and I wanted to collaborate with them. And then people who I've been fans of, who we connected with. And then people who like music, like Phoebe Bridgers, to get her on my show, I just DM'd her and I was like, yo, do you want to do the show? She was like, yeah. it was that simple. It was like, do you want to do this? Yes, great. And it was really that basic. And she was Phoebe is one of my favorite people, like, because she was so funny, so prompt, so, and just so game for everything. So I just had a wonderful experience. And then Fran Lebowitz, like, I watched Pretend It's a City and I thought, yo, like, this lady is wild, like, so funny and wild and interesting and such a staple of a New York culture, who she's been around since, she's been around forever in New York, yeah, in media specifically. And so I was really happy and lucky to collaborate with her for our pilot episode. But these are all people who I have been fans of in different regards. Who, yeah.
Did you have to, like, did you have to apologize to anybody afterwards? Like, because I know Fran came in and was like, I don't want to play games. And it's like, okay.
No, I haven't had, no, I know, because I'm a nice, I lead with kindness. Like, my point isn't to leave the interview being like, gotcha, I pranked you. Like, that's not the intention at all. And so I'm very conscious of the guests, where the guest's temperament is at, and what to push and what not to push. Because to me, it's a collaborative relationship. Like, we are sharing a space together to make something comedic together. I rely on them as much as they rely on me. And there has to be a sense of trust. So no, my guest left. Yeah, that wasn't my experience.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I just think it's exciting to watch. Yeah, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, like, but you know, what do you hope? I mean, you know, we are always talking about on TV and film, representation matters. You know, saying that out loud all the time, it gets exhausting. But then at the same time, it's just like, oh, well, it really does matter. And like our conversation shows it, you know, seeing, you know, you on the show, you know, first generation Nigeria, and just like a woman of color hosting her own show. And we barely have seen that before in ever. But besides that, you know, what do you hope the show brings to the table when it comes to representing yourself, larger conversations of representation and inclusivity, and just kind of the state of the world as a whole, even though it's kind of trash right now, you know, just like, what do you hope it just brings to the table?
I think that there's the micro and the macro, right? On a micro level, as talent, as a showrunner, as a writer, I hope that I can offer opportunities to people who have been traditionally left out of the working force of entertainment. Mm-hmm. So a couple of my writers were first time WGA writers, as well as I employed talent who had never worked via SAG before. And so I was really excited to offer a bunch of people who I have personally, who've been performing live in New York for years, who are funnier than a lot of people out there, give them opportunities to work and to have their credit so they can go on to get their second and third and fourth and 10th. Mm-hmm. So that's just on like the granular level. And then on like a macro level, I hope that my show punches up and encourages people to laugh at those in power and not treat them so daintily, and have really important conversations that are essential to the healing that we need as like a collective.
That's like the perfect answer.
Girl, yes. Yes, oh my God. How are we gonna get your parents to watch the show?
Sorry?
How are we gonna get your parents to watch the show? Have you?
I don't know, man.
You have to employ your siblings.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't seek validation. I do it for myself. Everything that I create for myself. I think that as an artist, I mean, you have to understand, this is like the 8th iteration of something I've been doing for years where no one cared. When I first started doing that Instagram live, do you know how many people were in that live? 30. And I would have to apologize to my guests and be like, sorry, I don't know what to tell you. Like, see you next tune in next Thursday when I'll be talking to X and Y, and I'd be screaming in an empty vacuum. And then suddenly I book Caroline Calloway, and then I book Alison Roman, and then I book Rose McGowan in succession, and suddenly the show skyrockets. But before that, I spent years working at a loss, just investing myself, not making any money, losing money, where no one watched, no one cared, no one liked it. It was a waste of time. Or seemingly was a waste of time. But because I invested in myself, I'm able to have the opportunity to have the Showtime A24 show. And so I'm really, really lucky that I believed in myself and supported myself and sought validation in myself. Had I sought validation externally, I would be dead, or I would have moved on to the next trend. Yeah. But you can't predict the trend. You can't follow. You have to lead. So if I can, impart any wisdom, it would be that it has to be for you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's so true about kind of like, you know, kind of just working your way up the chain, I guess you would say, and like not, it's like, it sounds trite and cheesy, but like not giving up. But I do like what you said about, you know, believing in yourself and not seeking validation from anyone else, because I do think like there's this whole thing about, you know, kind of getting validation. And I'll just say it from, you know, I was trained to get validation from the dominant culture, you know, and you're not worth anything unless that dominant culture says you are. Yeah. And, you know, and then if they say you're not, then you start to believe you're not. And, you know, now we're just getting into like a TED talk and like a very motivational speaker. But no, but it's true. It's like, it's so true what you said. It's like, oh, if you don't believe in yourself, how the fuck is anyone else gonna believe in you?
Yeah. I mean, you have to like it. That's at the very least, very most basic. If you don't like it, then what's the point? Right. Ultimately, mm-hmm. like I remember when I first started writing jokes, I freelanced for The Onion for years, and I'd be like, okay, what do I think that they want me to joke about? And that is an impossible thing to chase. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. And my jokes would often not get selected, and I'd be like, yo, I'm broke, getting paid per joke, and I'm not getting paid. Oh, yeah. And so you have to learn to make yourself laugh first. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, that's so true.
Oh, that's good. Z-Way, what's next?
I love that whenever I say something, you guys are like, wow, that's great.
I mean, but it's true. You are
like, this is great. This is like really fun.
On the podcast, because it's like, you know, we hope that generations, especially, like I said, people of color, people first generations, are inspired by what other people have accomplished that look like them and that maybe have a similar background. Because I think that this is important, you know, we didn't really see a lot of people that were doing what we want to do. And it's kind of hard to be motivated to do it when you don't see a lot of people doing it. So like everything you're saying is just, it's just really important. And I just really hope that people are inspired by your story. I'm certainly inspired by your story.
Oh my God, this is sweet. I love this. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
Also, you're just like, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm older than you, but it's just pretty dope, you know. But it's just pretty dope to hear kind of your point of view and like something, you know, as I actually have a journalism degree, and you know, I went to J school and all that, and you know, I haven't seen many journalists of color, and I do consider you a journalist. And just kind of like just seeing what you do and kind of how you approach things in this way that I had never seen before, and that's why I'm just like all just listening intently at everything you have to say, because it is very, you know, I'm learning. Teach me, Z-Way. Teach me.
Oh my goodness.
So Z-Way, what's next for you? What can you tell us now that you have your own series under your belt?
What's next?
What are you doing?
This show hasn't even premiered yet. Well, give me a break.
Well, it may have premiered by the time we end this episode. Yeah.
There's still a couple episodes we have to drop. You know, what's next? I'm writing a book. That's nice. Yes. I'm constantly just trying to whet my appetite as a creative, and I'm always looking for new avenues to express myself. I'm someone, and that's why, you know, I write and I produce and I'm talent, and then I make music, and then I dance, and I just like, and then I'm writing a book. So I want to get the most out of life before it's over, because I know that we're not here forever, and so I just want to let my imagination run wild.
Is there something that you haven't done in your career that you're itching to do? I read that you were a huge X-Men fan.
I do love X-Men. Okay. I loved X-Men. I used to watch that on the kids WB every Saturday. I loved Rogue, I loved Storm. Cyclops, I was like, he was a thought. I love Jean Grey as a phoenix who's just like absolutely out of pocket entirely.
Yes.
So, I'm a huge Marvel, like I love the Marvel animation, Spider-Man. I watched all those as a kid. I mean, I grew up on television and animation. So I used to voice Kamala Harris on Cartoon President.
Yeah.
I voice other animations, but I would love to get into the animation space. That's something that I've just like, I'm obsessed with. I literally, as wide as a net I could possibly cast, I want to do it all. You know, I want to do, I used to do plays when I was in high school. I played a fairy in Midsummer Night Dream. Yeah, Midsummer Night Dream. Is that what it's called?
Midsummer's yeah. Night Dream. Yes.
That's it. That's it. Yeah,
I'm come on, Shakespeare.
I know, right? Is that right? I might be wrong. I forgot. I'm tired. But yeah, I used to do plays. I was Dorothy in like a school play. So I would love to do everything and anything that my wildest imaginations. It's like I'm kind of just living my dreams in real time.
Mm. Yeah, Z-Way the musical, how about that, you know?
It's like we started in Nigeria.
I love that. Yeah,
but I think it would be funny if Will Smith was playing my dad, like a la Concussion. I think that'd be awesome.
Concussion.
Yeah, you guys remember Concussion?
Yes, that movie.
I think I'm sorry, but I love Will Smith. But yeah, I think it'd be cool. Yeah.
Will Smith has aged very finely, I think.
Talented actor, comedic timing, yes, and action timing and drama timing. So shout out to him.
Shout out to the Red Table Talk too. Let's
let the healing begin. I can't wait to be taken to the Red table.
Is that what they say? Let's
go. Yeah, I can't wait. I hope I can't wait to get canceled so I can get to that talk.
Okay, so we like to sort of end this the interview with the segment we call the facts or the FAQs, just random questions, fun questions. Sure. So your first question is, what was the last YouTube, social media, or internet rabbit hole that you went down?
Oh God, the last rabbit hole that I went down. Okay, so I watched this documentary on Netflix called The Art Made You Look. And so it was about how this one gallery called the No Flair Gallery had been allegedly like funneling fake Jackson Pollocks to these like super fancy people and like frauded them allegedly of a lot of money. Okay. You watched that? It was amazing. I love a documentary. So after I watch a documentary, the thing I do is Google, okay, who's pissed at who? What laws were, you know, I went down this rabbit hole, and then I started learning about the Isabel Museum in Boston, which was the largest art heist in history, where a bunch of paintings were stolen at random by these alleged, like, yeah, it was just, I love, so my last rabbit hole was like art thieves. And then I started reading about the most prolific art thief in world history, who was this guy who didn't even sell the paintings. He just hung them up in his room and he lived with his mom in like the south of France. So I've been reading a lot about art thieves.
Yeah, I do that. I do the exact same thing that you're, I just watched this QAnon documentary on HBO, and I went down the rabbit hole because I'd heard of it, but I never really paid attention to it. And I was just like, okay, what is this actually? It's some bonkers ass shit. Like, I'm like, y'all are crazy. I definitely spent like a whole day or probably more than that, just looking up what people say, comments, like,
I think art theft is very interesting, right? That's like a very interesting thing to steal. Like, I guess when you steal it, do you sell it or do you like, cause like, it's just very interesting to me.
I know it. And so with this really prolific art thief, I'm going to Google him cause I just remember, but this really prolific art thief, he wouldn't sell it because he's like, that's how people get caught. And so he would just, then so then he got arrested because he went back to the scene of the crime and he was acting really strange. And his mom, who didn't know he was stealing all this art, like burned it and threw it into the river. And which is really sad. This like priceless art from like, you know, 16th century, 14th century, super, super old, like valuable pieces. Oh, his name is Stephane Breitweiser. He robbed nearly 200 million museums and stole treasures worth $1.4 billion.
This is
really compelling article in GQ by Michael Finkel. And so I just love, I like really good long form reporting. Okay, nerd alert. So I like really good long form reporting about like sociopaths. So like, I read the Theranos book about Elizabeth Holmes. I read the book about
she's a treat.
She's wild, absolutely wild. I don't understand the voice. I'm like really interested in that. I read the Travis Uber book as well. So any sort of documentary or book or article that's just about like people who I don't understand not having impulse control, right? I have Nigerian parents who are very strict. So the idea that it's like, what if I went into this art museum and just took something because I wanted it? It's like, that's beyond my comprehension.
Yeah. How? Yes. And it's a piece of art. Like how?
And then you keep doing it. You just keep
constantly. Yeah, I would be afraid that I was going to get caught.
Yeah.
But they're not afraid. Like Elizabeth Holmes wasn't afraid.
Yeah, these people, like, but yeah, it's just like, after, I think for that person who stole all that art, I guess it's more of like the thrill rather than the actual end, that's hanging on my wall, I stole that. Or
no, like, he was like happy, but I don't know, but it's like psychological, right? Because it's like maybe one time, but I guess it is a drag, you're right. Maybe it is the thrill of doing it and not getting caught. So you just feel like you're invincible.
I wonder if there's like a mental thing associated with people, like
maybe
like if there's like a mental disorder or something. Like I just feel like there has to be something that makes somebody feel or gives that impulse to steal things and constantly do it. And
it's like an addiction adrenaline. Have y'all seen There Is No I in Threesome?
Yes, that's on HBO. That one's it's on HBO.
It's a documentary.
Yeah. But about what?
About there's this couple who they are in an open relationship and they're like days before their marriage. And
don't spoil it though.
Yeah, I'm not gonna spoil it. So that's pretty much it.
What's the hook?
The hook is you'll be spoiled if he tells you the hook. It's actually really good. It's just about a couple like they're exploring like having open relationships, threesomes and stuff.
Okay, I'm gonna watch this documentary.
It gets complicated. That's all we'll say.
Okay, I'm gonna watch this documentary, and if it's not a 10 out of 10, I'm gonna be pissed. I think
you'll like it.
Well, you could tweet out. You could put me on blast on Twitter if you want.
You know, I watch this. No, I'm probably gonna love it. I love a documentary. I just rewatched the Fire Festival documentary.
Oh God,
fantastic!
Have you seen? And the Tina one. Have you seen the Tina Turner?
I haven't watched the Tina. I'm saving that for a very bad day.
Because
I love a music doc. The Blackpink doc was amazing. Love the Ariana Grande documentary. I love a documentary.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to watch the Tina Turner doc. But I'm saving it for like it's gonna be like break in case of emergency.
We should start a documentary fan group. Like I'm so serious because I'm like I was the only person
that's pretty much
documentaries as much as I do, especially like
that's why I like Real Housewives. Because Real Housewives
is like, oh my god, you like girl. I talk about Real Housewives all the time, and I just feel like I don't know. I always feel like
I don't watch it. I'm sorry.
Because you don't have taste.
I don't have taste. I heard that the Salt Lake City one is kind of like wild, though.
Well, because someone was just arrested for fraud.
Yes, I saw that.
Girl, it is like you cannot write this stuff. You have to start. We're gonna start a reality documentary club, and we're all just gonna be putting in like our recommendations and having conversations and doing like.
I mean, that's pretty much all I watch because I can't handle watching. Like, if something scripted, it doesn't catch me like in the first 10 minutes, and I'm out. That's how I am lately, and plus we watch so much for our jobs that we're just like we don't have time. Okay, wait, we have to go. I'm sorry. There's more.
You guys didn't want to hear my documentary recommendation.
we will but I want to know what is one wild superstition that you subscribe to?
Superstition,
or are you superstitious at all?
I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't describe it as superstitious, but I'm probably superstitious. Like superstitious, like throwing salt over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Probably.
Or just maybe just like a ritual that you do.
A ritual that you do. Yeah. That you, maybe like you.
That is kind of crazy.
Reasons,
not know? Crazy.
I mean, like, I watch Real Housewives as I do my makeup. I don't know, but I'm sure there's more, but I don't know. Well, nothing comes to mind.
I remember when we used to be able to go out in public, and like I would go to a public restroom, I would always have to get 3 paper towels to wash my hands dry. That was a weird thing. I don't know why.
But I have those ticks, but it's not I don't even think about them anymore. I drink San Pellegrino's blood orange, but then I cut myself off because someone told me that it was like that. Someone was like, you should drink that. You shouldn't be drinking a lot of that because it's like sugary. So, but that's
but
just
it's so good.
That I know blood it's delicious. Orange, it's so delicious. So I have tics like that where I'm like I have to have my San Pellegrino or I'm like shaking. But I try not to be dependent on anything.
Okay. I'm totally dependent on everything.
Okay. Who are or is your dream guest for your show? Who would you say?
Who is my dream guest? I mean, Kim Kardashian would be a phenomenal guest. Mm. I just think that she has such a pivotal role in like 21st century American media. And I would love to hear her perspective on race. I think it's really
most
valuable of people on this planet right now.
DM her.
Yeah. Sure, I'll DM her. It's so weird that I never thought about that.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to hear the Kardashians talk about race. I honestly feel like that would be like a very interesting
special episode on a very special episode of Z-Way.
Because you know they never really talk about, even like when, I mean they throw their support around like Black Lives Matter and stuff, but they've never really like talked about that and what it means to them. And they all have Black children now, so they should be talking about it.
Yeah.
So
That's a good. Z-Way, how good are you at keeping secrets, and how long have you kept a secret?
I mean, there are secrets that you keep until the grave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so like,
I'm a Nigerian.
Would your friends say that you are good at, like, would they come to you with secrets? And you're a vault then.
Nigerians can be very gossipy though. So
it's auntie, but then they have their own
aunties. Yes.
But then they have their own secrets. Where you'll talk to your dad and they'll be like, oh yeah, I never told you this, but like, I sold our car. It's like, wait, what? You know what I mean? So it's just like, so yeah.
It's a very different balance act with Nigerians. It's like, I think we'll go with the grave to like our own secrets, but other people's secrets, yeah. Don't tell your aunties, because that's definitely not gonna say.
I think it's all aunties across the board.
Yeah,
you're right. It knows no color.
Right.
Secret opportunity.
I think it's like immigrant aunties across the board.
Because,
and then you have that cool auntie who's like, you know, you wanted to always hang out with when you were a kid, and you know.
You guys like have those. I was gonna ask, like, do you guys have like your aunties that you like hang out with, tell secrets to, and stuff? But they're like the same age as your mom, and you would never die. I have an aunt, like my mom's sister, who like, she's like we treat her like she's like we'll tell her everything. And then my mom hates it, because she's like, yeah, I'll tell her everything. But she's like a really cool aunt. Like, we drink together. Like, it was.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I had an aunt, she lived in San Francisco in the city. And like me and like, when we lived in the Bay Area and I was young, I was like, oh, wow, she's like working girl. She's just making it big. And I thought they were so cool. So, but
yeah. Okay. All right. This is a would you rather question. Would you rather live in a utopia as a normal person or in a dystopia, but you're the supreme ruler?
That's like, that's a wild question. Who has answered the dystopia?
I'm sure someone has.
You're there, especially with you're the extreme ruler. I'm sure there are people out there that are.
That would be like, I would open an investigation into their crimes. There is not a world in which I would want to be the leader of a dystopia in which everyone is miserable and hates me, where I could just be a regular person in a perfect world, which would be perfect.
Yeah.
Because that's the definition of utopia.
Mm. I do think there are people who
would. There are definitely people out there that don't,
I know, and I'm saying that those people should be.
Yeah, they should admitted. Be, they should, yeah. Because that is crazy. Yeah. So our final question is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, creator, that is not in the mainstream that you think people need to know about and deserves more shine from Hollywood and everyone else?
Like, who are some comedians that I think need?
Yeah.
I have a
friend, one of my favorite writers in the country, their name is Evan Waite. I know him from The Onion. He's a really good writer. Mm-hmm. Ayo Edebiri is someone who's young and up and coming, but she is really, really funny and brilliant, and also a writer performer as well. Who else? There are so many brilliant people that I love. Grace Kulenschmidt is someone who's very funny to me. Jess Tom is another comedian that's really, really talented. Pat Regan is a comedian who like is known and beloved by comedians, but I'm surprised they haven't broken out yet, because they're really, really talented. They're on my show as well. So is Grace Kulenschmidt. She's on my show. Yeah, who else? They're like Jordan Mendoza is one of my writers on my show. He's this young Filipino dude, and he
Filipino.
Yeah, and he is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, he's like a really, really sharp writer and sharp comedian and a great actor. Mm-hmm. And all of my writers are on my show. They perform on my show because I wanted to really incorporate them because they're all writer performers. So like, why not put them in the show? And so you'll see them shine as well.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I love it when I hear that there's Filipino talent out in Hollywood, because it's for some reason, either they don't kind of raise their hand and say we're here, or like, we just don't know that they're around. And I love hearing that someone Filipino is in your writer's room. Thank you on behalf of our culture.
All right. Thank you so much for being here with us today. This conversation was, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you're doing for representation, for diversity, for Nigerians. We haven't gotten to see the episode yet, but it's like, I'm already sold. This is,
oh my gosh, thank you. You guys are so sweet.
I'm very excited for it. And I'm very excited to see what else you have in store.
Yeah. When you're in the next X-Men movie,
I would, die. I love X-Men. I mean, that one is really, really, I just like that. Like the foundation of it is like Stan Lee just having like a lot of political opinions about World War II, I think is really, I mean, he was such a great writer. The way he like merges mainstream and like pop culture with like literal politics, I thought was really compelling.
Yeah.
I think it was so cool that like when I first was reading X-Men, like the comic books, and how, you know, going down that deep dive, and they were like, oh yeah, Magneto is supposed to be like Malcolm X, and Professor X is supposed to be more Martin Luther King, like that philosophy, and how they approach mutants, and you know that whole thing. But yeah, we look forward to seeing you in the next X-Men project, because they are developing it at Disney, and you know, we make things happen here on the podcast.
So we're gonna put it out into the universe.
Great, God bless. And you know, honestly, this sounds amazing. We love this for me. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you.